Hi, this is The View from Tab. This is Jim Menick, and I am here with Mike Beetz.
Hello, I'm Mike Beetz, and I'm in Los Angeles right now, in a bathroom, recording this view from some sort of tab. You might want to know what kind of tab is in this bathroom.
We didn't want to mention the bathroom part of this, but it's in there now, and we're also here with John Cruz.
Hey, this is John Cruz, not in his bathroom, but I am here live from New York. Exciting.
So this is the first time the three of us have tried to do this. We do ask that you are patient with us. We don't have the best equipment necessarily, but we're going to do our best to have at least an interesting conversation. We're going to try to take about a half an hour altogether, and we have a few things we want to talk about and one big topic that we want to talk about today. And Mike, why don't you start and introduce what the topic is?
The topic that... seems to be the topic that the Lincoln Douglas debate community seems to be wrestling with is this issue of disclosure and case disclosure and so on. I happen to fall on the side of being in favor of a system of open disclosure. That said, I think that's because I probably approach this from a system that I believe that we should have a system of complete openness. I think tabrooms should always be open. I think that the pairing should be open. I think that judge placement should be open. I think that everything should just be open. So maybe I approach this a little bit differently than others, but, you know, in trying to engage in the issue of case disclosure, it seems like it's become a very personal conversation, and I'm hoping that at least I can try to present a side of the argument that could maybe make it a little bit less personal and at least give a fresh perspective on it, because it seems like we're going a little bit round and round.
Okay, I have a simple question, which is just the mechanics of this, which is, I mean, how is Kate? I mean, I guess they did this in Texas at Green Hill. So how is this actually done?
Well, the way that it was done in Green Hill, you know, probably wasn't the best method. I do think that initially there would have to be some. Well, what happened at Green Hill was that there was a requirement. It was voluntary insofar as keeping your judge preferences was the choice that you had to make. You either participate in the open disclosure or you lose your judge preferences.
And you were banned from the tournament if you didn't do it.
That's correct. Yes, you wouldn't have to stop competing this year, but in future years you would not be invited back. I think that, you know, for the most part, people did participate in it, but sort of begrudgingly they participated.
Is this the first major tournament that this has happened in for LD?
As far as I know, I think that is the case.
Do something at the Skyway with something like this, or am I imagining that entirely? Was that a later version of the Blake Round Robin where they had some kind of disclosure? Am I just totally imagining that?
We may have. I don't remember. We did a lot of experimentation, right. And given that that tournament always runs right after the long Blake tournament, I kind of forget what has gone on by the time the Skyway reaches.
When we say disclosure, I mean, do we actually print out the whole case so that anyone could read everybody else's cases completely?
That would be my preference in terms of disclosure.
But that's certainly more radical than any current existing format, right? Either in policy or what was done at Green Hill.
Well, what was done at Green Hill?
Well, at Green Hill, what happened is you had to submit basically an outline of your case. You had to list any framework analysis that you had, any spikes that you had in your framework. Then you had to list, obviously, your value, your criterion, your contentions, any evidence that you had in the case. All that stuff had to be listed out and then put on the wiki of the NDCA or submitted. At first, we tried to use paper forms, but those were illegible. So then we just decided to just make use of the NDCA wiki. I don't know. I mean, if someone admitted that they did it intentionally, then sure. But I don't usually like to.
How much time between when these are posted and when the tournament actually began?
They were actually done sort of on the go. Like after round one and two, the judges were supposed to have submitted these disclosure forms to the – when they turned in their ballots, they were also to turn in these disclosure forms.
Now, something that I just want – oh,
The judges had a tournament?
Yeah, because, I mean, Aaron and I differed a little bit on this. I wanted the judges to have to fill them out, just, you know, basically just put their flow on there, just submit the flow. The way that it turned out is, and I guess understandably so, judges didn't want to do that, so because it took time to do that, so they just had the kids fill it out, and then the judges turned it in.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I think that the burden should go on the judge. Well, I don't know. I'm sort of an agnostic on this issue. I guess I didn't explain
well,
my...
Well, I mean, let's take out the mechanics of this. I mean, I can see all kinds of problems with the mechanics. I mean, that the judges and everything. But, I mean, the issue itself, the issue per se of disclosing...
Let me interrupt and say one thing about this, because I think there is one mechanics issue that is important, and that is that most versions of the case list, and I guess as background on this, I'm sort of agnostic on this issue. I obviously direct a large program that has a large policy team, so I admitted in a discussion elsewhere, I'm not very actively involved with the case disclosure decisions. It's the community norm and policy, so we just do it. Right, and our policy kits are completely fine with it. But one thing that is typical of most disclosure policies, in fact, all that I know of, is that you don't disclose the case until after the first time you have run that case. So that makes sense, right? That makes sense.
I don't think that's necessarily true at Greenhill, because I think there were teams that had not gone out before. Like, they have a midnight deadline where you just have to submit your 1AC.
Sure, fair enough. But many case lists have this idea that you can break the argument for the first time.
Yes, I think that is the case. And I don't believe that has to be the way that it's done. I think that, you know, if a tournament is on the first weekend in September, by the last weekend in August, or by the second to last weekend in August, I think you should have to submit everything you're going to run. I think that there are also team benefits of that, so your kids can actually sleep at tournaments and things like that. But, you know, I think... Those benefits aside, the mechanics of it, I think Jim is right. Like, that the first thing, I think the first barrier to overcome is just whether or not it's a good idea. And I do agree with the people who say that whether it's a good idea or not is entirely to do with the mechanics. But I think that there's also some philosophical reasons why it's good or why it's bad. And
I agree.
You know,
and I sort of wonder if a lot of – you mentioned before the emotionalism on this. And I sort of wonder if there are other related issues that need to be resolved before something like this would be palatable to a lot of people in the debate community. I wonder if that's what's causing these big issues. Like, the role of a coach in Lincoln Douglas debate has been called into question, which I think is a healthy discussion to have. I think it is a healthy discussion to have.
I think
I was following the discussion on the LD debate. .org, and it goes all over the place, and you're right, it does bring in what coaches should be doing, and obviously it brought in a lot of heat from a lot of quarters. But I mean, if we just, you know, I mean, I'm thinking back to times of when people know what they're running versus not knowing what they're running, and I mean, it's the question seems to be, should it be public knowledge what you are going to run? You know, obviously we have this thing where, okay, sometimes you get to run it without people knowing. But what is the, what are the advantages and disadvantages? Now, it seems to me that one advantage is that in terms of the actual debate round, I'm not spending a lot of time trying to find my stuff that goes with this case.
Sure.
That seems to make sense on the policy side. So I'm not just, where's my folder? You know, so I can find, you know, I can concentrate on actually answering the arguments. And that would seem to be a good thing for both sides. I mean, unless one side just wants to have the benefit of surprise, which seems to me a bad thing in a debate round. I know a lot of people like to run a surprise, and so they'll change their cases and all this sort of stuff. And or worse, they'll run really weird cases that would surprise anyone to have heard them for the first time.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying. So, I mean, it seems to me that there is a benefit to the debate round as a whole if we have some sense of what the positions are going to be. Presumably, by the way, we're posting both sides of this and not just one side.
Right.
I think that is right. I mean, to me, the element of surprise. I had a lengthy conversation with Stacey Thomas about this. And
yeah,
she
I want
was,
to hear about the element of surprise. I think
she
that
was her argument was, and it's the argument that I can't really answer back without making some sort of value judgment on a coaching style or a strategy, and saying that, well, element of surprise shouldn't be a thing, and I don't think I'm in a position to tell someone that, you know, there are people that rely on that to win. And, you know, and her example was schools that, you know, are new, don't have as many coaches, et cetera, that those kids often need to, I don't even want to say resort, but often use these techniques because it forces the more coached debaters to have to think in round and can't rely on their pre-prepared briefs or whatever that could happen. And that argument actually, to me, is the most persuasive, because I think that I think that there are people that do, you know, that's their strategy to win. I would say that I want to try to bring this back a little bit to how I approach this argument about disclosure. And I don't necessarily approach it from what's best for the little guy or the small program or the lone wolf or even from the program building perspective. I sort of approach it more from who holds power in our community. And when you talk to certain coaches, they'll say, well, you know, I know that I could go and find out what everyone is running, but I don't because I don't want to. I don't want to work that hard or whatever. But to me, that's, you know, there are people that do that in the first place. So those people have power, the power of knowledge or the ability to gain that knowledge. And then also, when the big round happens and they do decide that they do want to make use of that power, they have it at their disposal, whereas other people don't. So let's just say that I'm Coach A from big school that has, you know, 8 kids entered into the pool and has 4 judges in the pool, and I myself am judging. When the first out round happens and it's time for us to prep, I can say to all 8 of my debaters, give me all of your flows from all 6 rounds that you've debated, and we'll start prepping those. That team gets a huge advantage, right? Whether or not they're even asking other schools, just within that school, they get a huge advantage. And whether or not they choose to use it up until that point, to me, it doesn't matter. The fact that they own that power is what matters, and the fact that they have the ability to use that power, as compared to a kid who doesn't have that choice. They don't have that option, ever. So to me, a case list would say, it would democratize that power a little bit. So you can use it how you want. You can choose as a coach not to use that power. I think that the coach still has say, but to me it would be that every coach has say, and not just the coaches that happen to have large teams, political connections, a lot of judges in the pool, or whatever.
I have one question that I actually want to first ask to Jim, just because he said something before, and it relates to Beats, what you just said. Jim, you seem to be very, at least it seemed like you were opposed to the idea of surprise. You thought surprise in a round was a bad thing. Now, I guess I coach a very large team numerically. You know, we travel a lot and whatnot, but I debated at a very small school on a local circuit. And I guess I still come from the perspective that on some level, dealing with the unknown in a round is just good educationally. I know some people think that creates, you know, not as great arguments because you're not as well prepared. But on some level, I guess I think that having to confront something unexpected is a good challenge and a good function of debate. Is there something that you're more directly opposed to with surprises, or was I just misunderstanding what you're saying before?
I think it's not so much the unexpected as surprise as a tactic in and of itself. So I'm going to come up with something that is so far out that you can't answer it, rather than something that you weren't really prepared for, but you ought to be able to answer it. And I think there's a hard distinction for me maybe to articulate, but
sure.
I think that distinction is there. I mean, this goes back to something then. I mean, the argument that Stacy makes, which I understand, I mean, certainly the history of policy is that, you know, critiques and things like that are run by smaller teams that don't have the facility to do all the research that a bigger team has. But that, now this, we know that this has been going on for at least a decade, right? Does that mean that no big schools ever run critiques?
No,
I don't think that's the case.
Big schools run critiques all the time.
So it doesn't really hold then that this tactic, which is presumably invented for small schools, in fact stays with the small schools. So the element of surprise isn't, you know, limited to big, small programs.
I agree with you. I think it makes it, at best, it's a non-unique, because to me, that means that the big schools can just have more surprises.
Yeah.
I think that's completely fair. I just wanted to clarify what Jim was saying. And like I said, I'm agnostic on this issue, but I think that there are larger issues that perhaps need to be resolved for this to be a more comfortable discussion in the debate community. But I think that you're both right in terms of reasons to disclose
Yeah, I mean, I have a situation where, I mean, I have usually I'll go to a tournament alone with the students, you know, three or four students, and I'll be in the tab room, so I don't know what's going on in terms of people's debates or anything like that. So, I mean, we would be disadvantaged if I wanted to have flows and things like that. I have nothing against sharing what I've heard with my students. So the idea that there is a general sense of public knowledge, I mean, certainly some of that general sense of public knowledge is still going to benefit a big program because they still have all their people to work on it, but that's just life. I mean, at some point, big programs are big programs and little programs are little programs, and we just have to live with that. But I think Mike is right that you get some benefit that you would not be getting otherwise, if you are, you know, making people disclose what they're running, because that way everybody at least has some idea of some of the arguments that are out there as compared to only, you know, the big schools or the schools that have, you know, multiple coaches or multiple judges.
Let me add in that I also approach this just from a perspective of, from a community perspective. I'm very reluctant to talk about what's most educational and what's, you know, I think every coach has different ways to approach with every kid, and I don't want to say that one thing is more educational than another, or that this would lead to better education or anything like that. And so I still go back to who holds power in this situation, and I think that that also can manifest itself in what happens at a tournament when a pairing is released and you see all the kids that are friends with each other all gather around and share flows with each other, and then another group of kids that are all together and they're sharing flows with each other based on who they're hitting or whatever, right? Where that happens, and I just, you know, I see the kids who don't have that to go to. They don't have someone to go to, or they get to watch someone get prepped out or someone prepping out someone else against them. And I just think all that would disappear, that tension that exists, that the kid feeling like he doesn't belong, the coach feeling like they don't belong, if before they showed up to a tournament, they already knew what everyone was going to run, so there wouldn't be this sort of run to your friends who've already debated this debater. And, you know, the focus could then, I just see that also is a power dynamic that happens at tournaments that is a very unhealthy and almost unwelcoming dynamic to new people. And it's another thing that I think the caseless
I think that's an excellent point. There are a couple of things that I think would help make the discussion at large go a little more smoothly. The first is I can't help but notice that a lot of these small school, lone wolf, whatever you want to call them, debaters are just not coming out in favor of a caseless. It seems that it is the big programs that are having this discussion. And, you know, that's not to point a finger of blame or anything like that at anyone. It's just that I wonder if that is what's causing this atmosphere of paranoia, that this is something being hoisted upon the debate community by large programs only, because it seems that the people who would benefit from this are not coming out in favor of it. It'd be interesting to see if that changes over time. I do think that the point that you're making, Beats, about the unhealthy power dynamic at tournaments, is, I think, it's a very valid point. And I think that's something that people need to explore, why that happens, how that happens, if that's something that people are taking for granted. Something that's very interesting is a few years ago when we were at the St. Mark's tournament, our policy coach at the time, Sarah, noted to me how she thought it was so unusual that in the LD world that people went to other teams in the first place to have these discussions, right? And actually at the time she was already talking about disclosure, but how something like disclosure makes that just, I guess, less necessary, less common or whatnot, right? That it's so odd that there are cliques that are beyond teams where that happens. And that seems to be something from her perspective that was fairly unique to LD.
Well, I think that also creates another strange dynamic, and that is what happens when a coach is disclosing a flow to a kid that's not their own debater, and then happens to judge that kid later.
Agreed.
Because inevitably, you know, some coaching has gone on there, and I think it creates these weird lines where, or these weird graying of boundaries where I feel like there's no problem with that if it was just open disclosure that kids wouldn't have to, I wouldn't have to tell my kid who just watched him get prepped out with this one debater now have to have the person that did the prepping out judge them. Or even if it's not a prep out, if it's just a sharing a case that, but to me that would indicate that this coach preferred that debater to my debater, right? Because they took the time to say this is what they're doing. And whether or not that's true, perceptually, it still happens, and there's still an exercise of power. I don't mean to sound so much like Michel Foucault, but
butt in here and say that Beats mentioned before what he thought was the most compelling argument against caseless. And I actually think that what you're talking about right now, Beats, is the most compelling argument in favor of caseless. I think that the idea that that kind of sort of shadow coaching, meta coaching, whatever you want to call it, right? Like coaching kids beyond your team that is very prevalent in some sections of the LD community. And I agree that maybe it's not full-on coaching, but certainly the perception of favoritism.
Well, and then you'll go on and judge them later.
Right, exactly. Right. I mean, I think that's a very, very odd dynamic in debate. And I think that it's interesting that people don't associate that with the kind of openness that I guess you would get from disclosure, right? Like that's considered acceptable by some, but total disclosure is not. One thing that I
I'm going to just answer that really quick. I really have a really difficult time because I'm going to see people this weekend who are against disclosure go and prepare their kids based on flows, even from their own team or whatever. And to me, that's so. I don't know how to resolve those two things. I don't know how to resolve being against disclosure yet using flows, even if they're from your own team, to coach another kid on your team. To me, that seems insincere because you're just perpetuating this insideness, this holding of power. That gets perpetuated when. When the coaching happens or the disclosure happens in more of a backroom sort of way,
sure.
That I have a very difficult time resolving with also being anti-disclosure at that point.
What was the argument against it? The big argument against it.
The one that I find most compelling is that. And this has nothing to do with any coaching evaluation because I do find it compelling is that for the quote unquote new team or the lone wolf debater, the ability to have a surprise case against a powerhouse team that has a bunch of coaches, a bunch of judges, and a bunch of kids to be able to have that surprise. It's asymmetrical warfare, basically, right? You get to use asymmetry against them as opposed to going up against them, both of you guys having prepared to your best of abilities.
Okay, one thing I want to just interrupt and say is that one thing that I think is very important to consider in this whole debate, and I think this might be why I had sort of a visceral reaction to we had debaters at Green Hill that we all participated in the case list, but Jim and I were back in New York running a workshop for local debaters, so I was not actually at Green Hill. So when I discovered what was going on and learned the policy that was being implemented, I sort of had a visceral reaction, and I suppose that was largely because it was a mandatory case list, whereas in the policy community, and I understand now after talking about this with Aaron and others that this mandatory idea is actually now somewhat common at tournaments. But in policy debate, as case lists developed, the original case lists were voluntary, right? The idea was it was like a buy-in system. You post your cases online, or you post your cases on the case list, and everyone on the case list gets that information. And I suppose on some level, I think that with respecting everybody's coaching styles, that an argument – and this to me is the other very compelling argument against case lists – is that some coaches feel that a mandatory case list sort of irreparably or automatically rather will affect how they coach, right? Like they have to make an adjustment if everybody's cases are disclosed. Whereas if you have the option to disclose your cases, then that change or the perception that there has to be a change goes away.
Well, right? If we were to do this, it is a big change, and people would have to change. I mean, that's
sure.
Tough. I mean, that's just one. You know, life goes on. If there's good reasons to do this, I mean, I'm assuming that. I mean, if I have nothing stops me from running multiple cases, so I could post five cases if I had them.
Right.
Also, I mean, to answer John's point, I think that once you've run a case, I don't think there's any expectation that it's private anymore. Once that flow is out there,
agree with you. I just want to make that clear. I'm just saying that that's an objection that people have had. I actually completely agree with you. That's why I think that I guess my gut reaction is to say that if you have a case list, there's an argument to be made that you should be able to withhold your cases until you break them. But certainly once you break them, I think it's public information. And I think that people who say that it's not public information are blinded to the fact that they probably have access to networks that can tell them
it
cases.
It is public immediately. I see it all the time. I mean, it just is. I mean, that's just life. I mean, because people are talking to each other because they're friends or they've judged it or whatever the case may be. It's just once it's out there, it is out there.
Sure, and not only that, but once it's out there, I mean, we need to remember that once something is out there, it doesn't mean that it's going to lose automatically. We were running an Aristotle case at Greenhill. I mean, that's as old as Aristotle, right? And I think everybody knew that pretty quickly, even without the case list, because I guess they thought that was unusual that we were running that type of argument.
I mean, I would suggest that by the time we get to the Bronx tournament, there will be no new cases, and everybody will know everything there is to know on September, October.
And they'll have found out through means such as, I mean, absent the wiki that exists from Greenhill, they'll have found out from IM conversations and through phone calls and through text messages and through, you know, discussion at tournaments. And in my opinion, that excludes kids and it excludes programs. And the people that hold power in this community, you know, it's all relative. Everyone has different amounts of friends and things like that. We have privilege and hold a lot of power that a lot of, you know, new kids and new programs just don't have. And I feel like whether or not I choose to exercise that power doesn't deny that it's being held by certain people.
Do you think that buy-in case lists are bad then? I mean, if a small school is going to benefit from it, wouldn't they go into a buy-in case list, right? Or do you think
I don't understand this buy-in thing because I understand it, but I don't understand it intellectually. Once you've run a case, then the judge has the right to post it. What are they going to say? No, you can't post that. Or are they going to say throw your flow away? Because there are places that do that too.
I think we're not going to get any new stuff. I just have one question. I mean, is anybody else going to be any other tournaments going to be doing this in the near future?
I think Meadows might do it.
I heard. Bronx Science is not, only because I think that – well, there are a couple of reasons why not. But first off, I haven't completely made up my mind, so I don't feel comfortable imposing something unless I have an opinion. I felt perfectly comfortable imposing strikes and whatnot and saying you can use strikes at a time when that was still a little controversial in our area of the country. I've also, you know, imposed other things on my tournament before. But since I haven't completely resolved it, I haven't. But And I think that it's healthy to have a discussion perhaps before we're imposing. But I do think that I do respect that Aaron made that decision. I know that it is not easy to impose
That's
something.
That's a big decision to make,
very big
decision to make. I would we're hitting the half hour mark, and we'll lose everybody. If we go,
oh no, they're engrossed by the sounds of our voices.
No, that's what I'm afraid of. That they're long gone, and we'll never get them back. I just want to mention, I don't have the information. I will get the information at some point and tack it on to this. That we do have a website that will post this on. That there will be people will be able to discuss it if people want to call in and join us in a conversation. I'm sure we can figure out some. If we could figure it out to do it among the three of us, we could figure it out to do it with other people as well. I think this is a good discussion. I think the discussion about just openness in general, I think we should go on next time and talk more about this, because I think we've done a lot of things that it surprises me, some of the things that I've done in terms of openness. And Mike talks about open tab and stuff like that. And over this last year especially, I think we've done some things that shock me that I did them. And I think we should talk about those going forward. Just to change the subject completely, we did want to cover just a couple of other things, just to put some variety into the program so the people who are just waking up now from the last half hour can say, oh, that's what this is about. So we wanted to add like little features into this. We want to do this regularly. I'd hope to be able to do it every week or so. And one of the features we wanted to add is a view of like a tech kind of thing that's going on, something technological that's going on. And we had another thing that we'd like to do, which is our predictions for the weekend. So first, the tech tip of the week. Now, Mr. Beats had some technical thing that both John and I forgot what it was when we were talking about it. So, Mike, what was it again that you were
The one I'm going to talk about is this one that's called Instapaper. If you go to instapaper.com on your browser, what it does is you can be reading an article and you can commit it to Instapaper. You download the little application, or the, excuse me, the toolbar function, and what it does is it makes a version of the article that is then readable later, that you can either print or that you can read on a like your I used to have an iPhone, and so I would often get a large article that I wanted to read, but I didn't have time to read it all, but I wanted to be able to read it while I was commuting. In LA, you can commute and actually read at the same time, even if you're driving, because you're just sitting in traffic.
I'm looking at this. This looks cool. I like this already. I mean, just looking at it on the screen, I know exactly. I have the touch, so I can put it on my touch if I saw something. What happened? I hate to ask, what happened to your iPhone?
Well, I'm one of the people who had a BlackBerry, bought an iPhone, and then went back to the BlackBerry.
Beats, I'm so disappointed.
That is very disappointing.
You're talking to two committed Apple people over here.
I own four Apple computers.
All right,
I'm an Apple person, but the iPhone was just kind of slow for me. And, I found myself not answering emails via the iPhone because it was just kind of a pain to do it, to have to press so many things on my BlackBerry. I just pressed R and that's reply, and I don't need to do anything else and just write, and I can just press send then. Anyway, so this Instapaper thing is very cool. You on your browser, you just click read later, and then it will sync with whatever device that you have that's online. You just log in and it will sync all the things that you have listed as read later. Then if you are on your touch or your iPhone, then later on, even if you don't have a network connection, you can, after you've had synced everything, you can just read it later then. And it will have them all in there in a readable format. It usually takes out the pictures and it just has the text so that you can read it later. So that would be my technology find and worth sharing to the debate community as a thing to help save time. And a great place you could use this actually would be on if you do LexisNexis research and then you're going to get on the plane, you could do a lot of read later from that as well. I'm not exactly sure if all of Lexis will work on it, but either way, any website that you're getting information from, you could load up your read later queue and then have it all on the airplane with you, for example.
Okay, now we do have, I mean, this week, what do we have coming up? This weekend is Yale.
Wait. We have to give a shout out. We have to give a tech shout out.
What? One tech at a time. We need to have a tech thing. If you give it, it'll be.
Oh, fine.
You'll have nothing next week. So the question is, since John and I know exactly what it is we want to give a shout out to, but we're not going to do it. That's a teaser.
Ooh.
Pretty crappy teaser.
That was the worst teaser ever.
That is the worst teaser ever, but we will next week.
That was worse than the District 9 teaser, man. I'm sorry. Okay, sorry, that was nerdy. All right, moving on.
Okay, we're moving on. We do have in the Northeast, Yale is coming up. Any other tournaments coming up this week?
The Long Beach tournament is happening out here in Los Angeles, but I'll be at Yale, so we're going to be going right past Long Beach.
Samford
University, the Harvard of the South. Yeah. Okay. Whereas, like they like to call Harvard the Samford of the Northeast.
We're having at Yale, Mike, you're going to have the National Debate Coaches Association meeting of some sort.
I think so. I mean, my guess is that since it's going to be at the high school with only LD people, everyone will talk about the disclosure issue. I welcome anyone to...
He put it in the schedule on Sunday. I think it's on Sunday.
Oh, so it's on the campus itself.
Yeah.
Oh, so it'll be on the campus. Well, either way, my guess is that the issue of the day will be disclosure, and case disclosure, that is, not judge disclosure. I think everyone... Well, although at Yale, I seem to think that there aren't a lot of judges still don't disclose out there. So, but anyway, I think that the topic of the day will be case disclosure. I'm happy to engage this conversation with anyone. I try to approach it from a perspective of I don't think people are cheating a lot. I don't buy into the whole accountability argument. To me, it's all about who holds power in our community and how we can try to democratize that a little bit. So, that's what I believe the NDCA. Town hall meeting will be about.
Okay, so your prediction is that prediction. Anybody else have any other predictions for the weekend?
For this weekend. I predict that I will consume a tremendous sushi dinner at this phenomenal place off the Yale campus. I just need to share that.
Where? Oh, well. We're looking
for
a place.
I can't tell anyone that because
night.
I need to eat all the sushi. But if you find me at the Yale Terminal.
And you can't tell everyone that because everyone's going to. The paparazzi will show up, right?
Of course, right?
Oh, yeah. Very much. Okay, well, I'm going to wrap this up, and we will, as I say, we will post it. I'll put it on the RSS feed and the View from Tab. I'll probably put it in a few other places. But we do ask people to let us know what you think, and we'll try to. Do it again next week.
Feedback on the bumper music too would be welcome.
Yeah. Anybody who wants to give us some music, that way we won't have to figure out GarageBand, would be.
Although the current music is being composed by Jim Menick.
Well, I think the current music, I would point out, is a scale.
Oh, that's rough.
But I did. Well, I'm learning GarageBand, but it's a lot harder than a lot of other programs. Okay, so then I'll wrap it up.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Have a great night.